Hello, and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the 1980 Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm talking about the gods, monsters, mythological beings, and heroes that I find in it, and how to use them, and religion and mythology more generally, in your fantasy role-playing games. In today's episode, we'll be looking at two deities from the Central American Mythos section of Deities and Demigods. Specifically, these two are from Aztec mythology, although one of them maybe arguably has parallels in the religion of the Maya peoples. And we're going to begin with Huehuetheotl. Huehuetheotl is described here as the god of fire, and I don't think that that's... He both is and isn't. By which I mean that the name Huehuetheotl is associated with a particular presentation of this deity. Teotl is something that we've discussed before, and that means basically divine being, spiritual force. We can translate it as God for our somewhat approximate purposes. And Huehue just means old, so he's the old god. And he's presented as an old man with a deeply lined face, not as some kind of lizard guy, which is how he appears here. And he may, in that form, be connected to a Maya deity whose name is Mom or Grandfather. But Huehuetheotl is traditionally understood to be an aspect of a god called Xiuhtecuhtli, and he is a fire, daylight, volcano, calendrical god, much more like what you would understand as a god of fire. He's also not a lizard guy, though, so I don't know why Huehuetheotl is presented as having a lizard face. The only explanation I can think of is that one very famous representation of Xiuhtecuhtli is a mask that's made in a kind of mosaic, like a turquoise mosaic style, with lots of little tiles, and maybe if you had just looked at not a very good picture of that mask, you would think of those tiles as being like scales? I'm not sure about that. It's in the British Museum, and it's a very beautiful and kind of haunting object. Anyway, he is pretty important overall. As I mentioned, he's a fire, day, calendrical, volcano god. He's also the god of turquoise, which is particularly important in Aztec culture. And he is associated with sort of renewal ceremonies. Again, as a calendar god, that makes sense. And in particular, with ceremonies that occur once every 52 years. The Aztecs believed that the world was in danger of ending on these kind of 52-year cycles. So there were especially important religious festivals that were used to propitiate the gods and keep the world going. Kind of two minds about Xiuhtecuhtli, because on the one hand, his rite is associated with eating delicious tamales, which sounds nice. But on the other hand, it's associated with, you know, human sacrifice, including some really grim rites in which the sacred fire that's associated with him is kindled in the cavity in the chest of someone who's had their heart cut out. And we're going to talk a little more in our next segment about human sacrifice in Aztec culture, because it certainly was a thing, and how you want to portray this society, the human sacrifice raises some interesting questions about it. I would assume that the emphasis on human sacrifice is why Huehuetheotl is described in this section as an evil deity, although weirdly he's presented as a chaotic evil deity. And I think that this may be, you know, there's a line about things happening according to his whim. And so I think, therefore, there's an idea that this is to do with being a fire god, that, you know, he's fiery, he's kind of unpredictable, a bit like fire. But I don't think that that's actually consistent with the characterization of Xiuhtecuhtli, you know, a calendrical deity who's all about, you know, things being performed in the appropriate time would probably be lawful. Actually, you know what, I was going to talk about human sacrifice in the next section, which is about the deity Huitzilopochtli, but Huitzilopochtli is so important that I feel like there's probably enough to talk about there. So let's talk about human sacrifice and Huehuetheotl. So I mentioned that Huehuetheotl is the recipient of human sacrifice, you know, maybe not as much as some of the other deities, but certainly at some pretty significant festivals devoted to this deity, there are human sacrifices. Archaeologists are always a little cautious about talking about human sacrifice. Human sacrifice and cannibalism are sort of they're very sensational. They're the kinds of things that are going to get your excavation in the newspapers. But as a result, many archaeologists like to be very certain that that's what they found before they say anything about it, because first they're worried about being wrong, of course, but secondly, I think they're also concerned about being sensationalist, right? About hyping up these dramatic events in order to receive favorable press coverage. But there's a good deal of evidence for human sacrifice in the societies of Mesoamerica. So how do we cope with this? If you are having a society based on Aztec or Maya or other medieval Mexican society, then there's a very good chance that you're talking about a society that has some form of human sacrifice. And I think for most players, that's going to be quite a hard line in terms of identifying those characters as the good guys. You know, I think for most people, the culture that practices human sacrifice are probably the baddies. Obviously, as someone with a background in archaeology and history, I spent a lot of time thinking about cultures that had social norms that were abhorrent to me. You know, maybe not cultures that practice human sacrifice, but certainly cultures that did things like execute people for witchcraft, which, you know, is the person is still dead and the cause is equally not one that I believe in. Cultures who were completely okay with torture or slavery. You know, all things that right-thinking modern people are opposed to. It was actually, again, something I ran into in my D&D game the other night, where the PCs, you know, found themselves dealing with this society which had slaves in a way that they couldn't really do anything about. You know, the cleric went in and tried to help these prisoners of war who were being used to work in a mine and, you know, was able to sort of heal some of the ones who were sick and alleviate their suffering, but he couldn't really do anything to change their fundamental problem. And I think he felt quite bad about it. So perhaps it might be the case that in your, you know, Aztec-inspired game, you just say, like, well, the PCs are not the defenders of the status quo. When you have a very detailed society in a fantasy role-playing game, I think there's a strong impulse to make the PCs defenders of that society. Have that society be under siege from malevolent outside forces, and have the PCs be the ones who have to protect. The bad guys are infiltrating our society. The monsters are out there and they're going to storm the city. The evil cult are going to assassinate the king. And one of the ways to avoid those problems is simply to make your PCs the rebels against the status quo. This is the crud box thing, right? Where you can give heroic characters agency and allow them to choose their targets rather than respond to threats, because everything is a potential target, right? The world is so full of evil that they can start fighting evil wherever they feel like. The second thing is just to leave it out. Or you demonize those characters and make them bad guys. And that's fine. Again, human sacrifice is a pretty monstrous thing to do, and I'm perfectly okay with portraying that society as violent and corrupt. I'm just always a little cautious about the danger of kind of like justifying colonialism through this. Not that I think that that's happening in our fantasy role-playing games, but I don't know if you've ever seen the film Apocalypto. You know, Mel Gibson, I'm not a fan. But back when I watched it, I thought for the most part that it was very good, in particular that it's got a good kind of beginning and middle. But right at the end, it seems to me that it all falls apart. You know, at the end, the Spanish show up, spoilers for a movie that came out 10 years ago or whatever, and there's sort of this implication that the arrival of European colonizers was a punishment on these people for this violent lifestyle that was full of human sacrifice. And without wanting to excuse any of the, you know, violence and injustice of classic or even post-classical Maya society, because this is meant to be the classical period, it looks like. What are the Spanish doing there? That's hundreds of years off, but never mind. Without wanting to excuse any of that violence or injustice, I don't know that we can say that Maya society is all that much more bloodthirsty than Renaissance Spain, right? You know, I mean, if we're comparing the Spanish and the Aztecs, how do you morally judge an entire society? But I guess what I'm saying is that there's something about the religious nature of human sacrifice that makes it particularly horrific to us. Human sacrifice is horrible to us in a way that judicial execution or even just murder isn't, even though the end result is the same, which is that somebody is dead. And so I just feel like that's something that you have to think about. What is the role that sacrifice is going to play in this game, and, you know, how much do I want to engage with the historicity of it, or how much do I want to just gloss over it, or have it be there and be evil, but allow the PCs to have a different relationship to it rather than simply accepting it. In fact, the entry about Huehuetoca says that he mainly accepts sacrifice in the form of valuables, which I think would be great, right? I think that's a fine, you know, you can control gold piece and magic item inflation, and you can have the PCs like going to get magic or historic artifacts or great works of art or whatever, just with the idea that they're going to be sacrificed to the devouring flames of Huehuetoca. Like, it's a great motivator for a mission. And I think if you want to run kind of like a fun, rollicking, all-ages adventure, you'd just maybe leave out all of the human sacrifice. Or not. I don't know. How do you deal with this in your games? I mean, if you're running societies that are based to some extent on ancient or medieval societies, then there are going to be these injustices and inequalities in those societies, right? Whether you have slavery or not, whether you have, you know, sexism or other forms of prejudice, I mean, whatever that might be, it may be that the player characters don't want to be complicit in that kind of thing. How do you deal with that? Anyway, speaking of warlike societies, let's introduce our next deity, Huitzilopochtli. Now, Huitzilopochtli, I mentioned earlier, we could really argue is the supreme god in... Oh, piece of Huehuetoca trivia, Xiuhtecuhtli is possibly married to the water goddess we mentioned last time, Chalchiutlicue. So, we said that it was possible that Chalchiutlicue was married to Tlaloc, or that she was his sister. If she's his sister, then she's married to Xiuhtecuhtli. Okay, now let's move on to Huitzilopochtli. Now, I've mentioned in the past that Huitzilopochtli is maybe a better candidate than Quetzalcoatl for the supreme deity, at least in the specific context of Mexica, Aztec mythology, as opposed to the mythology of other Nahuatl-speaking cultures of Mexico. Huitzilopochtli is a war god, but also has many other cosmic functions. And the Templo Mayor, the great temple in Tenochtitlan, was devoted to both Huitzilopochtli and Tlaloc. In fact, Xiuhtecuhtli plays a role as one of Huitzilopochtli's weapons. In his serpent form, Xiuhcoatl, he is actually carried by Huitzilopochtli and used like a javelin. The name Huitzilopochtli comes from a root word that means hummingbird, and maybe hummingbird of the left or hummingbird of the south. He has a number of various birth myths, but many of them include that his sister and his 400 brothers attempted to kill him. He defeated them, his sister fled, and he pursued her. And so the idea is that all of these hundreds of brothers who were scattered in the battle, they became stars. And the sister is the moon, and she sort of like flees across the sky each night. The central myth of Huitzilopochtli is that he led the Aztec people from their legendary ancestral homeland, Aztlan, to where they actually resided, in Tenochtitlan. He sent them on this journey, and he would send them a sign to tell them when he got there. It's much more complex than this. It involves several stages. There's a bunch of stuff going on, but ultimately, he would send them a sign to know when they had got to where they were supposed to go, and that would be an eagle perched on a cactus catching a serpent. And of course, that is the central motif today on the flag of Mexico. So Huitzilopochtli is remembered on this symbol of the Mexican nation. Like Xiuhtecuhtli, he's a recipient of human sacrifice. And specifically, he's associated with warriors. You know, warriors go to join him when they die, which is one of the reasons that the hummingbird... maybe it's the other way around. You know, either Huitzilopochtli, the war god, is a reason why the hummingbird is a martial symbol in Aztec culture, or hummingbirds being a martial symbol in Aztec culture is why the war god's called hummingbird. I have no idea which way around it goes. I think that the association of Huitzilopochtli with war and courage, with an afterlife for warriors, and with sort of questing and voyaging, means that Huitzilopochtli would be a deity associated, you know, with fighter and paladin types in a Mexican-inspired game. And, you know, we've said before that Huitzilopochtli is a Mexica deity, not one shared, or certainly not considered to be of the same importance by some of the other cultures of the region, and that, you know, that role might be filled, like Mixcoatl fulfilled that role in Tlaxcala. But definitely the sense of, you know, of power and courage that's associated with Huitzilopochtli is, you know, very relevant for kind of the daily religious worship of player characters in a way that maybe, you know, calendrical deities who are very important in both the Aztec and Maya culture might not be. We haven't talked about the military orders of Aztec society. They're very interesting, and they might go at the end. I'm sure that there's an equivalent of these in the Mexican-inspired D&D setting, Mazteca. These were essentially orders of warriors, often translated as knights, based out of Malinalco, which was the place where, again, according to legend, the Aztecs had settled on their travels from Aztlan to Tenochtitlan. These orders of knighthood were very interesting. One really fascinating thing about them is that they were one of the only ways that commoners could enter the ranks of the nobility. Aztec society was very stratified, and to gain some of the rights of nobles, you know, if you were a commoner, among the only way that you could do that was to join, you know, was to demonstrate your prowess in battle and join one of the military orders. The Eagle and Jaguar Knights, associated with, you know, the most dangerous animals on land and in the air. There's just so much that's fascinating about these societies, and I feel like a lot of the mythology is going to be very hard to understand if we don't, like, look at those societies in detail, but at the same time, I don't know that that's something we can do. But anyway, I feel like the, you know, the centrality of a war god, you know, is very relevant to our image of Aztec culture as a conquering culture, right? This is a militaristic culture that, you know, imposes its rule on the polities that surround it. And if you want a symbol of the sort of twin priorities, you can take a look at the juxtaposition of shrines to Huitzilopochtli and Tlaloc, so to the war god and the rain god. Now, again, Huitzilopochtli fulfilled a lot of roles other than war deity, but that was certainly one of the big ones. So, you know, this is a society that thrives by farming and by warfare, right? I mean, that's every society of that type, but is rarer to see them just come right out and say it, I suppose. Plus, now this is purely an aesthetic preference, but one of the things that I really like about these cultures in this period in history is that they look terrific. Now, I mean, that's a very shallow thing to think, but if we're stealing images from them as inspiration for games, I think, you know, visuals are an important part of that. And too often, I think, we get dragged into this stereotype, which is that looking good is for spellcasters. And bards. I guess bards are spellcasters, but you know what I mean. That fighters are grim, gray, iron guys, and then, you know, wizards are in fancy pants robes and whatever. And, you know, maybe you have a nice surcoat with your heraldry on it, but that's about it. But the incredibly elaborate display involved in the military cultures of the Valley of Mexico, certainly, are really interesting. You know, there it's a bit like heraldry in that the local who knows a lot about them can look at this person and tell something about who they are and what they've accomplished, which is of course what they're aiming for. But I just think it'd be nice for fighters to get that opportunity to show off a bit, right? Like, don't think there's any reason not to have dandy flamboyant fighters. I mean, if you look at cultures throughout history, you know, militaries are very display oriented. You know, think of the fancy uniforms that you get in sort of the Napoleonic Wars, or think of the way that, you know, Landsknechts wore these fantastic slashed outfits. You know, soldiers, when they can afford to, often very begin to display as a means of asserting their social status. And that was definitely true of these guys. And I think if you take that image, you know, the Huitzilopochtli, the hummingbird, the warlike hummingbird, you can see how that translates to the way that this culture might present itself. Anyway, that I don't know that that's directly related to Huitzilopochtli, but I think it kind of gives us some pointers in terms of inspiration that we can take from Aztec and Maya culture to include in a role-playing game. All right, well, we've had a very Aztec-focused episode. In our next episode, we're going to start off by taking a look at two heroes from Maya mythology. And these are the protagonists of the Popol Vuh, Hun Apu and Xpalanque, the hero twins. I'm really looking forward to getting into the Popol Vuh because it's a fantastically interesting piece of literature. So please join me then for Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.